Good morning. Today's daf in Ksuvos Kuf Tes. We are winding down to the end of the Masechta. A few more days to go before we conclude. Here we are in the 13th parak of the Masechta. 13th parak of Masechta Ksuvos is brought to you by primarily two Tanayim. One is Chanan and the other is Admon. Chanan had two Gzeros that made it into Mishnayos over here, and Admon has seven. We're up to number three of Admon. The Mishnah starts off with the following, and that is an agreement was made between father-in-law and son-in-law. Father-in-law not only promises his daughter in marriage, but promises also a lot of assets, otherwise known as an adunya. Over the course of this Masechta, we spoke about it often. In fact, the Chachamim tried to incentivize to the best of their ability for the father-in-law to make a significant contribution to the marriage, to kickstart the marriage. And so a dowry was given by the father-in-law in order to get the two going. And so what the father-in-law did is he promised big, but he didn't deliver. So now when did he make this promise? So it's not perfectly clear from the Mishnah. Let's assume that we're talking about during Kiddushin. It's not after Nisuin. After Nisuin, they're married already, so there's really not much to father-in-law can promise. But anyway, let's assume that this is somewhere around Kiddushin. So Aposik Malachasus, Apashalo as a regal. And then what the father-in-law did is he stuck out his foot. Basically, he said to the son-in-law, I'm not going to give you what I promised. Okay. So what do we do under those circumstances? So the Mishnah says, I'll tell you what we do under those circumstances. Teshev Hashitab and Rosha. So now what he could do is basically he can let his wife sit there until her hair goes white. In other words, until she gets old. So he can allow her to be in a guna until his father-in-law delivers on that which he promised. Okay, a couple things over here. First, a general comment. Phil and I were making this point before the daf formally started, and that is that the language you're going to see here in this 13th parak is unusual, right? It's colorful language. You're not going to see language like this throughout Mishnayos. Generally speaking, the Mishnayos are very straightforward but meanwhile, the language that we see, the expressions that we see here in this 13th parak are amazing. In this Mishnah alone, what did the father-in-law do? He recanted on his promises, but that's not what the Mishnah says. Upashad as a regal, right? He stuck out his leg. In a moment, I'm going to explain what expression actually means, but in this context, but you just see the expression over here in the course of these Mishnayos, right? Previously, what happens when you sponsor somebody, when you sponsor the woman, it's like putting the money on the back of a deer, right? So just like these kinds of expressions you're going to see over here in the 13th parak, one can speculate in terms of why it is in the 13th parak the expressions are so colorful, but they are. In other words, just the, I don't know why, but anyway, but they are. And so, meanwhile, yeah, in other words, Rabbi Yehuda Nasi was responsible for these Mishnayos, but when I say responsible, meaning he edited, he organized, but in other words, but these Mishnayos probably go back to Chanan and Admon, or some version of the Masorah from them. Okay, regardless, it's certainly an interesting language that we find over here in this final parak of Ksuvos. Anyway, in the course of our Mishnah, what happened? So father-in-law promised, he didn't deliver. Ufashat esaregel, and he stuck out his leg. So Rashi says, I'll give you one of two ways to understand this. Look at the first Rashi, the only Rashi in the Mishnah. So Rashi says, Lashem bizuihu. Va'amar no eisha eino chash ledvarav. Tol tit sha'al gabe ragli. He says, basically, you know what you're going to get? I know I promised a lot, but you know what you're going to get? You see the mud on my shoe? That's what you're going to get. Okay, so, obviously, the father-in-law now is showing tremendous disrespect and whatever. He's not just saying I recant, but what he's saying also is basically, here, take the dirt on my shoe. But Rashi says, Vanisha mati talos ol eitz ve'enli malitein. The second pshat of Rashi is that what you can do is you can hang me upside down. Meaning, what do you think? You think I have money in my pockets right now? I don't have any money. I know I said I was going to give you a lot, but look, let's be honest right now. I have to be honest right now. I don't have money. And you can hang me upside down by my feet, and you're still not going to shake anything out. Okay, right. They're definitely in the Rashi, by the way. Those are two different tones in which you're proposing in terms of how the father-in-law's reaction is. Regardless, the point, of course, is that he's reneging on his promise. And so the Mishnah says, Teshev Hashitab ben Rosha. So according to the Tanakhama of our Mishnah, so now he can put her in a state of aguna. Now, mind you, by the way, we spent a good part of Yevamos going over the idea that we never want a woman to be an aguna, and the Chachamim do actually do many things in order to prevent a woman from being an aguna. So this is an oddity in which basically, you know what? Because of the promises that were reneged, so therefore she's going to be made an aguna. Okay? So this is unusual area of halacha that we're in right now, in which she is going to be made aguna because of the father's reneging of his promises. Now, Adman Omer, back to the Mishnah, Adman Omer, Yecholi Shetamar, Ilu Ani Pasak Latzmi, Yeshev Achetab Ben Roshi, Achshav Shabba Pasak Ma Ani Yechol Lasos, Okinosa Petur. And now, according to Admon, she has an excellent taina, and she'll say to her husband, look, if I made the promises and reneged on the promises, I understand how you're going to punish me. But don't punish me because of what my father promised and reneged. That's not fair. So in other words, here, let me give you some options. Marry me, divorce me. In other words, but don't punish me now. Don't make me an aguna because of promises that my father made. And I'm Rabbi Gamliel, Rowan is Divrei Admon. And Rabbi Gamliel says, you know what? A fantastic point. Meaning, yeah, Admon's right over here. In other words, I not like the sheet of the Tanakhama of our Mishnah, but rather like Admon, in which the husband cannot make her an aguna, but rather one of two. Either he'll marry her or he'll divorce her, but not can leave her in a state of an aguna. Okay. Tosfos over here, first Tosfos on the Amud, I'm highlighting it. We're not going through it, obviously, but I'm highlighting it over here. You know, just not about a week ago did we learn that when agreements are made between the families, between the two parties, so they write up a shtar, it's called shtar psikta. If you remember, a week ago, we talked about it. And not only that, it's a binding contract, even if no kinyan was made. And so that means now, that if the father made a promise, and presumably at the Shas HaKadushin, if he made a promise, he absolutely is bound by that promise. So what is he going to do? He's going to basically say, I'm reneging, I'm not giving you anything. In other words, he's absolutely bound by it. So what Tosfos is bothered by is obviously what seemingly is a stira between that Gemara and our Gemara over here. That Gemara seems to suggest, it says it. That any agreements that are made Vishas Kedushin is absolutely binding. And meanwhile, over here, father-in-law made a promise and he's just simply casually reneging. And he says, no, I'm not going to do it. Huh? Well, you're right. You're operating with the second Pshat of Rashi, right? Maybe in the second Pshat of Rashi. Okay. But still, even within the second Pshat of Rashi, meaning he still owes it, meaning... Okay, but in other words, but what he can't say is basically like, I don't have anything. In other words, he's saying that, but not to renege, just simply say, look, I don't have the means right now. But okay. Anyway, so there's a stira between the two Gemaras. What Tosfos over here does is he gives approaches, multiple approaches in terms of how to address what our Gemara says over here that the father-in-law is reneging and the Gemara earlier that says the father-in-law is absolutely bound by his commitment. Okay, yeah, it's obviously important to try to resolve these two Gemaras. We're going to our Gemara. Masis and Deloki Aitana. Okay, as far as our Mishnah is concerned, so our Mishnah is not going to be agreeing with the following Braisa. As we all know, so Braisas are basically extensions of the Mishnayos, right? Other Tanaitic works that were collected. Rabbi Chiyama has a collection of them. Rabbi Oshi has a collection of them. And the Braises are typically not as authoritative as the Mishnah, and there are going to be times when the Braises and the Mishnah are not in agreement with one another, right? The Gemara says that, generally speaking, Rabbi Chiya has a Braisa that usually will work in concert with the Mishnah, but over here, the Gemara is noting that we have a Braisa that is not in agreement with our Mishnah. What's the Braisa? D'tanya, I'm a Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yehuda, L'nechelku, Admon, V'chachamim, Allah, Posek, Ma'os, L'chasno, U'pashalo, V'sregu, Sheikholi, Hishtamar, Abba, Posek, Alai, Mani, Yechol, Asos, Amma, Nechelku. So where don't they argue? Where they don't argue is in the case where the father makes promises. Meaning, like our Mishnah. Right? Our Mishnah says that if the father made a promise and he reneged, so what did we learn in our Mishnah? Machlokus, between the Tanakhama and Admon. Good. According to the Braisa, no. If the father made a promise and he reneged, nobody's arguing. There's no debate. Of course, her taina of, you know, don't punish me because of my father's promises, that's a strong taina. Everybody agrees to that taina. So, so then where is the debate? On the following, Asha Paske, he, Alex Masha Chacham Amram Mimteshiv Ashatab in Rosha. Admon Amar Yechol Yishitama Kisvur Ani. Sha'aba Nosen Alai Va'achsha Shein Abba Nosen Alai Mani Yechol La'asos. O Kenosa Patur. Amar Gamliel Rawani is Divrei Admon. So here in the Braisa, the point of dispute between the Tanakama and Admon is in the following case. She makes the promises. She tells him, you know, when we get married, you know what daddy's going to give us when in our marriage? And she makes a number of promises to him in terms of what daddy's going to provide and what daddy's going to kickstart our marriage with. Okay. Under those circumstances, now we have a debate. The Tanakhama says, now, if, let's say, she reneges, so then you can make her Naguna. And Admon would say, no. No, you can't make her Naguna. Again, either you'll marry her or you'll divorce her, but you can't make her Naguna. And why? So in the brace, what we just read together is that the argument of Admon would be, she thought she would have daddy's backing. Look, her whole life, she thinks she knows her father. She thinks she knows what her father's financially capable of. And what she thought is that she was going to have financial backing by the father. Granted, she was the one making the promises, but she thought dad would have her back. In terms of financially backing those promises. That's what she thought. Okay, and now what she came to learn is that dad did not back her on this. Okay, but in other words, but according to Admon, it doesn't mean you're going to punish her. Again, either you'll divorce her or you'll marry her. Okay, and then, good. So, obviously, this Braisa is not in agreement with our Mishnah. Our Mishnah has a machlokas when dad makes the promises. The Braisa has a machlokas only when she's the one making the promises. But... give me a moment. Great question. Just give me a moment. Now, over here, we have an addendum brisa to the brisa we just learned. That's only true when she's a gedola. Ba'katana kofin. But when it comes to a katana, kofin. We force. Compulsion. Now, the brisa over here is obviously modifying what we previously said, but it's a little bit ambiguous. We compel her to do what? Oh, those are important questions. The Gemara says, Kofin Leman. Yeah, that's the Gemara's question. So, maybe it means that we're going to be compelling the father. Yeah, maybe that's the Pshat and the Braisa, but it's not the Pshat and the Braisa because then it would be just the exact opposite. Right? Bamedvar Mamorim, Bikitana, Ava Bigidola Kofin. Meaning, if in fact the compulsion is going on the father, father's only compelled to financially back his daughter if his daughter made these promises as an adult. When she says things as a minor, they have no basis whatsoever, no bearing whatsoever. So, Elam, Rava Kofin Labal, Li Tenget. So, no, what the Braisa means is as follows. If the daughter was a minor and making all these promises, you can't hold her to any of the promises that she made as a katana. In other words, as a katana, look, she knows how to talk, but she doesn't have the requisite das where anything she says is going to be held up and have to be given any kind of real consideration. Okay, so she made promises as a katana. That doesn't mean that they have any binding power whatsoever. And then in the event that where the 10-year-old, the 11-year-old said to her husband, here's what dad's going to give us. And so it doesn't mean anything. And therefore, so when dad doesn't comply with whatever the daughter promised, so the husband cannot at that point in time, even according to the Chachamim, the husband cannot now hold her, to her promises. Rather, again, either marry her, or divorce her. And if the husband's being resistant, compulsion. Okay, we're going to compel him to divorce her. Okay, that kind of takes us to the end of this. Okay, Marty asked a question. So in the event that he divorces, is he going to have to pay out ksuva? I'm not sure. It's a great question. I'm not sure. I'm tempted to suggest that, yeah. In other words, this is not something that's going to be a forfeiture of ksuva, especially in the Mishnah's version. Where in the Mishnah's version, it's the father who's the one who's reneging. In the Braisa version, where she's the one who's reneging, I'm a little bit more reluctant to suggest that. But again, I don't know. That's my first answer, is I don't know. Meaning if the father's the one making the promises. So yeah, in other words, and he's reneging, yes. In other words, but as Admon points out, that was the father. That wasn't her. She wasn't the one making the promises. Okay. Okay, I start off with, I don't know, with, I haven't seen anyone saying on this. I'm Rav Yitzchak ben Elazar, Mishmei Dechizkio, Komakum Shammah, Rabbi Gamla Raoni, Estivri Admon, Halacha Kamoso. Okay, so, let's organize our perek. In our parak, we have two statements by Hanan. And by the way, go back over those two Mishnayos, and you'll notice that Hanan got the backing of Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai. Okay? Hold that thought. We also have seven statements made by Edmon. Now, we only right now know of three, because that's the number we've gone through. Upcoming in our parak is going to be another four. Okay. And Edmon gets the backing of Rabbi Gamliel. Not all the time. Of the seven statements of Edmon, if I'm correct, three of the seven are going to be backed by Rabbi Gamliel. Okay, so when does the halacha fall like Edmon? So the Gemara quotes in the name of Chizkia that every time that you see Rabbi Gamliel backing Edmon, the halacha is kamoso. Okay, it's going to be a little bit difficult. Remember yesterday's daf? So in yesterday's daf, we talked about Nechasim Mu'atim. And one of the things we pointed out by Nechasim Mu'atim is that if the estate is really small and the dad dies, so all that money is going to go to the girls and the sons are going to go knocking door to door. And what did Edmon say? Edmon said in that Mishnah, I don't like that. So it bothered him, right? How could it be? B'shul shani zachar yifsadati, but because I'm a male, I'm going to lose out. Now, was he arguing with the Tanakhama, or was he just simply bothered by that position? As we pointed out yesterday, not clear. Not clear in the Mishnah. The Rishonim debate this issue. Tosfos and the Rambam aren't odds on this particular issue. Anyway, so it's interesting because our Gemara says that every time you see Rabbi Gamliel backing Edmon, and by the way, in that Mishnah, Rabbi Gamliel backed Edmon, right? Rabbi Gamliel, and that it's yesterday's stuff. Kuf Chesam Adbeis, top Mishnah. I'm Rabbi Gamliel. Rowani is Divrei Edmon, right? I agree with Edmon. He agrees with the comment of Edmon. He agrees with the halach of Edmon. Okay. Anyway, from our Gemara, what it certainly sounds like is that it was a halachic position. Okay. So So komakom shamar gamliel ro anis divrei Edmon halachic kamoso. So amalei rav le rav Nachman afilu bebraisa. So now, what if I find not a mishnah where it's Edmon backed by Rav Gamliel? What if it's a braisa? Where do we have a braisa? We just saw one. We just learned a braisa together where Edmon has a position backed by Rabbi Gamliel. So I'm like, me Kamrina ben Mishnah, b'chol makom shama Rabbi Gamliel Kamrina. So his response is, yeah, did you hear what I said? I said b'chol makom, any place, doesn't matter if it's a Mishnah, does not matter if it's a Braisa. I'm Rabbi Zera, I'm Rabbi Bar Yirma, Beis Varam Shamar Chanan Halacha Kayotze Bo Shiva Dvarim Shamar Edmon Ein Halacha Kayotze Bo. So now we have a similar statement that was made by Rabba, which is that the two times that Hanan said a halacha, halacha is like him and kayotze bo, and the one who backs him up. As we already pointed out, Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai backed the two statements of Hanan. And additional to that, every time you find Edmon, the halacha is going to be like him when he's backed by his partner. Well, we know Edmon's partner, it's not his partner. In other words, but, right, probably not living in the same generation, but Rabbi Gamliel backed Edmon. Not all the time. And so, but when he backs him up, so then the halacha is like him. Now, what I did at this point in time is I gave away the punchline. Meaning, I explained to you what he meant. At first, the Gemara does not fully understand what he means. So, my kamar. So, the Gemara says, now, what exactly was meant over there? Ilem achi kamar shen dvarim shamar chanan halacha kamosa v'chayotze bo v'shiba dvarim shamar admon hen halacha kamosa v'lo chayotze bo. So, it doesn't mean that the halacha falls like Hanan and Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai, and the halacha does not follow like Edmon and Rabbi Gamliel. So Vahamar Yitzchak ben Elazar Mishmei Dechizkel Komakum Shamar Rabbi Gamliel Roni is Divrei Edmon Halacha Kamoso. Yeah, but meanwhile I know that the three times that Rabbi Gamliel backs Edmon, we just learn that the halacha is like Edmon. So Elahachi Kamar. So the Gemara says, okay, so this is what we're going to say. Shnei Dvarim Shamar Chanan Halacha Kamoso V'Chayotzebo Shiva Dvarim Shamar Edmon Ein Halacha Kayotzebo Hakamoso Halacha B'Chulu. So when it comes to Hanan's position, the halacha falls like Hanan. So, but when it comes to the seven statements that were made by Edmon, so in halacha kayosebo, hakamoso halacha bechulo. But if it's just him, so then the halacha falls like them. The Gemara says again, that can't be what he means. V'amar Rav Yitzchak ben Elazar Mishmei Dechizkia, kol makom shamar Rabbi Gamliel ro'ani es divrei Edmon halacha kamoso. Amar in lo amar lo. Meaning, what you have to follow is when does Rabbi Gamliel agree with Edmon and when he doesn't. And again, it's split. Sometimes he does, sometimes he doesn't. Elahachi Kamar. So the Gemara says, okay. So final and accepted understanding. Shnei devarim shamar chanan alach gamoso v'chayetze bo. Shiva devarim shamar admon yesh mehem shalach gamoso v'chayetze bo v'yesh mehem shein alach gamoso ela kayotze bo v'kol makom shamar m'gamlo roan is divrei admon alach gamoso inachlo. Okay, so now again, I said this at the front end, but now the Gemara finally concludes that this is a correct pshat. Notably, that when we have a halacha set over by Hanan with the backing of Rav Yochanan Zakkai, that's the halacha. The first two Mishnayos of our perek, and then as we're here in the middle of Admon's halachas in this perek, so when Rabbi Gamliel co-signs on that, then the halacha is like Admon. When Rabbi Gamliel is not co-signing on that, the halacha is not like Admon. Good. We're now in the bottom of Kuf Tes Amud Aleph, and we are continuing over here in the Mishnayos and the halachas that are set over by Admon, and this will be now number four. The Mishnah starts off Ha'orer al Asada. Okay, so a person now is challenging the ownership of the field. Now, when he says he's challenging, because he believes that it's his, so that means to say that, let's say, for example, Reuven looks at a field and says, "That field belongs to me." I know right now Shimon currently thinks that he owns it. And for good reason, by the way, because Shimon purchased it. So I totally understand how Shimon believes that the property is his. But let me give a little bit of background over here, says Reuven, and that is that the land was stolen from me, and when Shimon bought it, he bought it from the thief. So Shimon never really owns the property. Okay, so that's Reuven's taina. Okay, obviously now he's going to go to court, and he's going to need evidence and proof to prove that his story is true. Right now, there happens to be a pretty good amount of evidence, one really solid piece of evidence, that Reuven's not right. Why? Because on the deed of sale that went from the thief, the alleged thief, to Shimon, so you know who signed on that deed? Reuven. Okay. So now, Reuven's in a bit of a bind, as now he's making this claim, but meanwhile, as the courts are now going over exactly what happened, hey, Mr. Reuven, we find it so curious that you say the land does not belong to Shimon, but meanwhile, on the title, when it was sold from the thief to the alleged thief to Shimon, you know, I'm looking at two witnesses who signed on it. You know, you happen to be one of those two witnesses. That's interesting. That's curious. So now, under those circumstances, is there any way for him to explain how it is that he signed on that document? It was his signature. He did sign on it. Does he have a good way to explain it? So according to Admon, yes. Let's see the Mishnah inside. So Orel Asada, and who Chasam Alei Ba'ed, he signed on the sale, on the title. So Admon Omer, Hasheni Noach Li Arishon, Kasha Himenu. So Admon would say yes. Here's his argument. His argument's as follows. When the property was in the hand of the thief, so he felt that the thief was way too wild, way too reckless, and way too powerful. There's no way he's going to wrestle that property away from the thief. However, if I can get that property into somebody else's hands, so that person is much easier to work with, I can take him to court, and I can litigate and get back my field. So the only reason why I signed on the title is just because simply I wanted the thief out of the picture. The second person is just going to be so much easier to deal with. That's why I signed on it. Okay. It's a story. Not the best word. It's an explanation. Okay, that's a better word. It's an explanation. Is it possible? So Admon says, yes, it's possible. And v'chachamim mormim ibed izechusa. And the Chacham disagree. No. When you're signing on that title, it's a pretty good amount of evidence that you're not the owner of that property. Why in the world would you co-sign? Literally co-sign on a title allowing somebody else to go ahead and purchase it. Okay, so that's a machlokas between Admon and the Chachamim.
He's signing under duress. I mean, that's his
title,
right?
Not even. What he's arguing is that I'll have more leverage. Okay. We can call it the rest, but I'll be in a better position if I can get it out of this guy's hands. Okay. Asa Simon La'acher. Now, Ibed Zuchuso. a similar situation in which, once again, he's claiming the land belongs to him, and meanwhile, the adjacent property was sold. Now, when you sell property, so what you want to do clearly is mark off. Hey, where's this property? In other words, obviously, the title is going to clearly identify where the property is located. And a great way of identifying where it's located, it's noting who the neighbors are, who's to the north of the property, the south, the east, the west. And so what the towing did, this one's making the claim, is that he signed on a sale of an adjacent property. And in that title, in that sale, it says, oh, you know who owns the property just to its east? You know, the property that he's right now claiming belongs to him? It belongs to so-and-so, meaning the person who currently is on it right now. Oh. And this guy now, the one making the claim, Reuven, so he actually signed on that sale of the adjacent property, noting its neighboring property, noting that the neighboring property is currently owned by the person he's trying to wrangle out of. Once again, that's really curious. The Mishnah says if he signed on that document, Ibed Zechuso. So once again, now he lost his rights to claim that property, being that he co-signed now on the adjacent property, clearly marking and labeling that this property that he's trying to get belongs to somebody else. Okay. And by the way, note over here, then this second case over here, Admon's not arguing. Meaning in this case, there really is no good explanation in terms of why he signed on it, other than the fact that it's probably true. Now, I'm Rabbi Loshanu. Loshanu ela ela aid. Aval dain lo ibed zechuso didni Rabbi Chia ina aidim chosim el ashar ela im ken karahu. Aval hadayanim chosim afapishlo karahu. So as we just turned from the Amud Aleph to the Amud Beis, so the Abai makes the following qualifying statement. This idea that when you're signing on a document, you're signing to all the details of the document, that's true if you're a witness. Because rules when it comes to shtaros, when you're a witness signing on the document, you must read the document. Okay. We live in a world we are so used to clicking on agree, agree, agree. And Baruch Hashem, we don't read a word. So good. So that's the world we live in. But when you are an aide and signing on a document, you must read the document. So, and therefore, when the aide is signing on the document, he is co-signing on every detail in the document. He just signed on a bill where it's adjacent to another person's property. And in the text, in the body of the document, it says, hey, you know, the field just due east of this property is so-and-so's property. Not Reuven, somebody else, and Reuven signed on this. Reuven is signing on the fact that that adjacent property belongs to somebody else. Okay. However, Abaye says the contrast is the Dayan. When the Dayan is signing on a document, now why is the Dayan signing on a document? Notary, Kiyum Shtaros. We go all the way back to the beginning of the Masechta, not the very beginning, the second parak, where we learned all about notarizing a document. In other words, the witnesses are signing, and then as an extra security feature, which we have to this very day, right? We have notaries. So back in the day, so the document was notarized, based it would sign on the document saying we are notarizing the signature, as we already pointed out, and the Gemara now is reviewing for us. When the Beis Din is notarizing the signatures, they are not expected to read the document. All they're doing by notarizing is just simply saying those signatures belong to that person. We know that. We're familiar with the signature. And so therefore, when Dayanim are signing a document as Kiyum Shtaros, they're not expected to read the document. So therefore, if he signed as a Dayan, as Kiyum Shtar, he's not expected to read the document. Okay. Asu Simen La'acher. Okay, sorry. We're at the very, very top of Kuf Tes Amud Beis. What if the adjacent property was not sold to somebody else, but what if the adjacent property was sold to himself? He was the buyer. He was the buyer of the adjacent property. And in the title, as it's now going over the borders, it says in the title, oh, by the way, the property just due east of it belongs to so-and-so. You know, the guy he's trying to wrangle out of. And now when he buys the adjacent property, so that does not lose his claim. It does not dismiss his ability to go ahead and still claim that other property. Because over here he has an explanation. What was I supposed to do? Meaning I wanted to buy the adjacent property. If I'm now trying to buy the adjacent property, and now I'm going to say, wait one second, you know, not every detail here is right. You know, that property next door doesn't belong to him. It belongs to me. So then the sale's not going to go through. Meaning right now he's trying to make a purchase. And okay, so right now there's a line that's wrong in the title. But if I start arguing about that, I'm never going to get this property. So that's understandable. That's a good explanation. So my Isak Lamamri by Leila Mimser Modas. So the Gemara says, well, how about this? You know what? If you were going to, at a later point in time, argue that you're not co-signing on every detail here. So what you should have done is Moda, we're going to see this a number of times throughout Gittin. And that's the idea that before you sign on something, you basically, you send out a Moda ahead of time. Basically, I'm doing this under protest, right? This is being signed under protest. So why don't you announce a Moda prior to signing on the document? The Gemara says, no, because that's not going to work out. Because Chavrecha Chavre Yisle, Vechavrecha Chavre Yisle. Now, because once you announce a protest before signing on the document, everyone's going to hear about it. And the seller at that point in time for sure is going to hear about it. He's not going to sell it to you. So your strategy right now is, you know what? Not everything in this document is right, but I want to buy this property. So I'm just going to keep my mouth shut for now. And then later I'll explain to everybody, yes, there was one line that I disagree with, right? Who's the owner of the adjacent property? I think it's me. I didn't protest simply because I was more interested right now on the sale going through. Hahu, we're following up with a story. Hahu da'aso simla achir. Okay, so the ear air, and then v'shachiv. So, a person had a sale on an adjacent property, and again here in this case, what happened was that all the neighboring properties were outlined, where they were and who were the owners of it. And now, after he purchased the adjacent property, he was trying to make an argument as to, yeah, I know that. And now, by the way, I'm sorry, just one point of clarity. In this particular case, he was not the buyer. Somebody else was the buyer, but he signed on the document. Okay, fine. So anyway, and now he's trying to argue that the adjacent property, even though he signed on the document that it belongs to somebody else, he's really the owner. He was trying to argue that. And then in the middle of arguing, so I don't want to be overly dramatic, not directly in the middle of arguing, but at some point he dies. Now, okim apotropa. So what they do now is they appoint an apotropos over his estate, and also apotropos lekamida abaye. And so the apotropos goes to abaye and amrele, so asa simon, acher ibe zechuso. So they say to the apotropos, look, right, I appreciate that you are handling all of his estate and all of his assets, but that property that he claimed belonged to him, it can't belong to him. Why? Because on the sale of an adjacent property, he signed on that document. And over here on that document, it said clearly that this property didn't belong to him. It belongs to somebody else. So there's nothing you could do in terms of getting back that property. So Amar, so the apotropos said to Abaye, I have avon, yas me kayem, have a time v'amar, tell him echad asisi lecha. So the apotropos is really smart. He said, you know what? Yeah, I know he signed on that document. You know, when he was going over the borders, he didn't mean that the entire property belonged to that other person. All he meant was that one row that was directly adjacent to the property, and only that row belonged to the other person. The rest of the field belonged to the deceased. That's what I'm arguing. Interesting. So is that a good argument? So I'm Relay Shapi Kamar. So Abai said, love that argument. That's great. And not only that, Amar Rav Yochanan Nimtam V'Amar Tel Mechad Asis Alecha Neman. Yeah. In fact, Rav Yochanan tells us that is in fact an excellent counter argument. So Zil Havle Miyas Tel Machir. Okay. So what you did, however, is you conceded that one row. Okay. But you get the rest of the property. Good for you. So Hava Ala Richva Dedikla. Now it happened to be that one row had excellent palm trees on it. Excellent. So Amrle have Avon Dias me Kaim have a tan Vamar Khazatev Lakhti Mimenu. So then he said, you know, what I would also now argue is that even in that one row, yes, it's true, it was owned previously by that person identified in the document. But you know what? He ended up selling it to me. Now, I'm not really sure how that kind of works, meaning if there was a sale, so there should be paperwork. There should be some sort of title, bill of sale, proving that that the property, in fact, belongs to him. So this part, I'm admitting, I don't fully understand, meaning that works as just a, simply a claim in of itself. Now, Rashi, of course, is bothered by this, and Rashi says, Neman, I'll read the Rashi inside, HaPesh HaAsur HaPesh Yeter, the Me'ach HaShiyesh Edim Sha'isa Shalo, V'Nigzal HaYimenu, Ein Lezez Chusa Ba'oso Telam, Ela Alpiv, Shal Zeh Sha'asu Simon La'acher, V'Arichaz V'Amar La'kachtiv. Well, Rashi says that his Neman is predicated on the principle of HaPesh HaAsur HaPesh Yeter. It's only because he incriminated himself by co-signing on the adjacent property, so now, since he created the Isser, he can also create the Heter as well. Okay. I don't fully understand it, but that's a problem with me. It's not a problem with the Gemara. Anyway, so, and Abaye liked that argument as well. So, Amar Le, Shapik Hamar, so Abaye says, good, I like that as well. So, the Amar Rabbi Yochanan Im Ta'an, the Amar Chazarti V'Lakachti, in fact, Rabbi Yochanan says as well, that if you say that I went and repurchased it, so Mimenu Neman, so he's going to be believed. So Amar Abaye Haiman Demukim Apatropa Nukim Ki Haidi Adal Afchub Bezchusi Diasme. And so then Abaye points out, this Apatropos was excellent. In other words, despite the fact that the owner of the property, who's now no longer here, he's deceased, but the owner of the property, he was so lucky, so fortunate to have such an Apatropos, because even though the owner signed on an adjacent document outlining that this property belongs to somebody else, what the apotropos successfully did is argue that the property in fact is owned by the Reuven, the one who claimed to belong to him. Okay.
Did Reuven have that he originally owned the property? What did he bring to say besides a verbal declaration?
Right. So I'm unsure. Unsure. It's not clear in the Gemara what he had. I mean, Shimon clearly has a title that he purchased it from, you know, the alleged thief. So, okay. Reuven must have had some proof that belonged to him, but I don't know what it is. It's, again, an excellent question. Misha halach l'medina sayam. Okay, and we are up to number 5. Okay, the fifth statement of Admon, and what we'll do today, Mirtz Hashem, is we'll finish up number 5. Misha halach l'medina sayam avda derech sadeu. Now, hopefully this is going to sound familiar. Why? Because we did this not so long ago, back in Yevamos and Daf Lamed Zayin. So we covered this Mishnah, and we covered basically this discussion. So this for us would represent great Chazara. And that is that a person went away for some time, and now he comes back to his property, and his property is landlocked, right? People are owning it on all four sides. Now, he had access to get into his property. And there was a pathway, okay, obviously. But now, as he comes back, a year later, 2 years later, whatever the time is, and what does he discover? The pathway to his property is gone. Okay. No trace of it. So, Avda Derech Sadeu. Admon Omer Yelech Lo Bekitzara. So Admon says, okay, look, every property is going to have an access point. Right now, the four properties surrounding him does not, took it away. One of them took it away, okay, with no trace. So Admon says, good, give him an access point. Which one? The shortest pathway. So v'chachamim omrim yikna lo derech b'mei amana o yifrach ba'avir. Either what he's going to have to do is he's going to have to buy an access for 100 mana, meaning whatever price they want, he's going to buy it. Alternatively, what he could do is he could fly in the air. Okay, second time today, and again goes back to our opening point of today's daf, in that the language over here in this parak is unbelievably colorful. So good. So either you figure out a way to fly, right? Back in the times of the Tanaim and Amorim, would they ever dream, right, that you know you could just simply fly in the air? Okay, so wait, one second. We're recording right now. We're recording. I know. Thank you.
So
my time at the Rabbanan. So Shapir Kamer Admon. So the Gemara says, so what's the reason behind the Chacham Shapir Kamer Admon? So Admon's saying very good, meaning he had a pathway to get there, so let him get his pathway there. So Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Rav, Kigon Shi Kifu Arba B'nei Adam Arba Ruchoseha. So he says, okay, so what was happening is that the four properties were surrounded by four people. So we Achim Aitamid Admon. So the... So if that's true, what's the reason behind Admon? Amarava Arba Das Mikoch Arba and Arba Das Mikoch Ad Kuli Amalo Pligi De Matzi Matchilei. So good, good. So the Gemara says like this, that if it's four people that are coming from one person, meaning the four properties that surrounded him and were purchased by one all purchased from one single person. Alternatively, Arba Das Mikoch Arba. Four people are coming from four different people. So then what can happen over here is that look, we're not going to have a disagreement. If those four properties are owned by four different people, so then he's coming back and he's going to say, I had an access point over here. Good. I had an access point. Wonderful. Okay. Each one of them are going to say, you know where your access point was? Speak to those other three people. Don't talk to me right now. Good. So keep pleading. So the Gemara says, so when in fact are they going to be arguing? So, so it's one owner. But what that one owner did is that they bought it from four different owners. Meaning, let's go over the history over here. He went away. Four different owners were surrounding him on the four sides. Good. So now when he returned, so there were two notable changes. One is that one person purchased all the fields. Two, he lost his access point. Okay, so now he has one owner to work with. However, before he and he doesn't have an access point. And before he left, there were four people there. But now, can't he just reason with the one owner? Look, I had an access point, right? You're with me, right? There's no way that my land is landlocked. I had an access point. So you're going to give me an access point, right? So Admon Savar Mikomakom Darke Yisrael Chabach. So that's exactly the point, the Admon's position. Meaning, it's a reasonable point he's making. Give me my access point. And again, it's not four different people I'm negotiating with. It's one person. Give me an access point. And v'rabbanan savrei, isha takt, shatakt. So, and the chachamim say, look, here I'll give you your options. Your options are right now, you could be quiet. Okay. And to use a cliche and figure it out. And ilo, and if not, in other words, if you want to keep pressing me on this, so I'll tell you what I'll do. Ma'janashar, lamar, v'lamasas lashui, din ba'adayu. You know that I purchased these four properties from four different people. So if you just keep chirping in my ear, what I'm going to end up doing is I'm going to just sell it back to the people who bought it from me. And you know, when I do that, so then you lose your case altogether because you can't deal with four people because each one of them is just going to tell you, don't talk to me, talk to the other three. So now, in halacha, by the way, this is really interesting. Are we looking at a threat over here? Or alternatively, it's not so much a threat. It's that since he could do that, he's given the power, the executive power, to now make this argument. Okay, either way. So what comes out over here is that the machlokes between Admon and the Chachamim about his lost access point and his ability to recover his lost access point is not as flatly stated as the Mishnah states. Meaning the Mishnah presents it as they're always going to debate this point, as we just saw in the Gemara, they're not always going to debate this point. Meaning if there are four different owners, so then Admon is going to agree with the Chachamim. The only time that they're arguing is whether there's one owner who purchased it from four different people. Okay. Two more quick comments before we conclude. Sahu Adamalu Dikla Lavras. A person said, I'm giving a palm tree to my daughter. Okay, so in other words, so he's preparing his estate, and obviously all the estate is going to go to his boys if he leaves it through via Yerusha. And so what he does is he gives his daughter something before he dies, which, by the way, he's promoted to do, right? It's called Nadunya. But over here, it's not even so much Nadunya. In other words, he's just giving something to his daughter. Good. So So what the Yisamim did is they divided the estate and they didn't provide for her a tree like dad gifted her. So Rav Yosef said, okay, good. That's our Mishnah, right? It's the same as our Mishnah, where basically each one of the brothers can tell her, go talk to the other brother. Okay, so Amalei Abaye Midami. So Abaye says, no, not comparable at all. Hasim kochad v'chad mati matchilei, but hacha dikla gabayuhu. So it's not comparable. In the case of the Mishnah, each one of the owners that surrounded his property can say, yes, you had an access point. Not by me, but rather by somebody else. So now, my takantayu. So the Gemara says, okay, so, and I'm sorry, as opposed to over here, she had a palm tree, meaning she was gifted a palm tree. So it was her palm tree well before the properties were distributed. So it's there. So my takante. So leishchalu dikla and ladulifugu mereisha. So now what we're going to have to do is that we're going to have to divide again, meaning everything goes back to the estate. She's going to get her tree because that's what dad gifted her. And now after she got her tree, now a division of all the properties. Okay. Hahu damar lahu dikla levras shachav shavik trei pagad dikle. Okay. Similar story. One notable difference over here. And that is that she got her tree, but she got two halves of a tree. Now, the two halves of a tree, just to make this understandable, because yes, I did struggle over here. It's not, trees don't come in halves. In other words, trees are whole. So, but what it means is that she was given a 50% shareholding in one tree and a 50% shareholding in another tree. Okay. So dad told her she got a tree. She got a tree. But not exactly the way as she envisioned, and not exactly the way that dad envisioned, or that's really the question. Meaning, when all said and done, she does have two 50% shareholdings of two trees. It does really make up a full tree. Is that satisfy the wishes of dad? Now, unfortunately, he's not here, right? So Yosef Rav Ashi v'kar kashir le mikari inchi le trei paga dikla dikla. And so the question is that. Is this how people talk? Can we qualify the two halves as a full tree? Can it be that when dad said, I want her to have a tree, this is actually part of what dad would have envisioned? Although, or maybe no. So Amar le Mordechai le Rav Ashi, hachi Amar avini mehagrunya mishmei derava, karu inch le trei palga dikle dikle. So the Gemara says, yeah, people talk like that. Meaning it's within the parlance of people. And so, yeah, it qualifies. Two halves of a tree make up a whole tree. At least people could talk like that. And so, therefore, her two 50% shareholdings of trees would in fact, be a fulfillment of dad's wishes. Ad Khan takes us to the end. And tomorrow, Mir Hashem, we started at the very top of Kuf Yud Amud Aleph. Let's quickly recap. Okay, we did three admons today. I know that's a funny sentence, but that's what we covered. Okay, so on the very bottom of Kuf, Chesem, and Beis, we started the Mishnah, Posek Masa Chasna, where father-in-law made promises of the dowry that he was going to give to his daughter-in-law, to his son-in-law, and Pashat Esraglo, and he said, no, I'm reneging. So what the Mishnah says, Machlok is between Admon and the Chachamim, according to the Tanakhama. So the man can keep her in the state of Aguna, which again, I told you, it's just unbelievably remarkable, right? We do everything within our powers that she doesn't, but over here, in this particular case, the Tanakhama would say yes. And Adamant says, no, you're not going to make her an Aguna. In other words, she has a very reasonable counter argument of, I didn't make the promises, dad made the promises. Okay. And so therefore, Adamant's position, which is backed by Rabbi Gamliel, is that you cannot make her an Aguna. Either you'll marry her or you'll divorce her, but you're not making her an Aguna. So the what we learned in the Gemara is that there's a brisa that gives us a different version of when Admon and the Tanakhama are arguing, and good, and that takes us really to the end of the Amud Aleph. And then the when does Halacha fall like Hanan? Always, meaning in the two gzeiros that he introduced to us. When does Halacha fall like Admon? When he's backed by Rabbi Gamliel, which occurs three of the seven times. Then the next Mishnah, the man is protesting the ownership of that field, saying that he's the rightful owner. I was sold to somebody else. He signed on the title when it was sold to somebody else. So, and he's claiming, Reuven's claiming that it was stolen by a third party, and that third party sold it to Shimon. Okay. But meanwhile, he believes that the land belongs to him. He was actually there signing on the title when it was sold to Shimon. So according to Admon, what he can argue is that, yeah, I want the Shimon to have it because Shimon's more reasonable than that thief. And so I could deal with Shimon. And the Chachamim say, no, that's not a reasonable argument. You can't say that. And then similarly, we also deliberated, what if he signs on the sale of an adjacent property? And in the adjacent property, as it's noting who its neighbors are, so it points out that one of the neighbors is a property that he's claiming is his, But meanwhile, in the document, says that it belongs to somebody else. So that also takes away his chus. That takes away his ability to argue. Good, so that's that was the Mishnah. By the way, in that case, Admon didn't argue in that case. Okay. Anyway, so the Gemara on the Amud Beis gives us a story with the Apotropos, who was successfully able to argue even in such a case. Good. And then finally, the last thing that we saw was the Mishnah where the person went away for some time. He comes back. His landlocked property no longer has an access point. It had an access point. It no longer has it. So now can he demand an access point? And Admon says yes. The Chachamim say no. And the Gemara qualified when exactly they're having this debate.